Who says academics are all hidebound and stodgy? In her Harry Potter courses at James Madison University, Elizabeth Gumyor uses The Boy Wizard and His World to teach students about the workings of scholarship. Tell me how you met Harry Potter.
I met Harry Potter by accident. I found the first book lying all by itself in the parking lot of my dentist's office. And because I take in stray books as I take in stray cats, I picked it up and started reading it while I was waiting for my turn in the dentist chair. And I don't mind admitting that after 10 pages, I was totally hooked. And I had long resisted reading those books because I thought, well, this is just a fad. Harry Potter is not going to be interesting to me. Let that be children's literature, and I'm reading something else.
So what hooked you?
The way she constructs the world of Harry Potter and the narrative elements that make that world very consistent, very logical, very engaging. The reality, really, of a fantasy world pulls us in. It makes us, as readers, become part of that world. And there are only few writers who can do that really, really well. And I was just fascinated by that right from the start.
You teach in the School of Writing and Rhetoric at James Madison University.
Yes.
What does that mean, you teach?
Writing, rhetoric, and technical communication, actually. What does that mean? What do we teach? The sort of very quick and dirty, not so dirty maybe, way of explaining rhetoric while at the same time getting around a lot of the negative connotations that the word carries with it is to say that the study of rhetoric is the study of language and how we can use it better. I'm hoping that that is what students really take away from the classes I teach, including the Harry Potter related courses.
Now, what does Harry Potter have to offer students or anybody who's interested in what you just said?
Well, language is a major feature of the books because Rowling constructs, invents the terminology of that world. For instance, the spells are based on Latin. A lot of names for creatures are based on mythology, but she makes slight changes. As young readers, and not so young readers actually, we gradually are introduced into that world and it becomes a consistent experience for us because of the language. And lots of people have actually studied that. Where does the language come from? What is the inspiration for the word she invents? The study of language in Harry Potter can then help us understand the study of some other language community.
Going back to your students, You actually teach a course in Harry Potter.
Tell me about the origin of that course. In 2003, I went to a popular culture conference, and in the book exhibit, I found what was the first of many critical anthologies of Harry Potter scholarship.
Many, yes.
By now, I have an entire bookshelf, long bookshelf in my office that is filled with various edited collections of critical essays, a whole body of secondary literature that has developed on Harry Potter in the last decade plus to 1, 2, 3, maybe. The first one that I found was Lana Whitted's The Ivory Tower and Harry Potter. And Lana Whitted is at Ferrum College here in Virginia. That book, together with another one by Elizabeth Heilman, Critical Perspectives, Multidisciplinary Critical Perspectives on Harry Potter, were the first textbooks that I used. Based on those books, I developed a course that I taught for the honors program at JMU. And those students were, in a way, guinea pigs for my experiment in teaching Harry Potter. what was clear from the start for me was that I did not want to teach a fan club course. I did not want to sit around with my students and gush about how much we love the books.
And who's your favorite character?
And who's your favorite character and who's your least favorite character and what plot line makes sense to you and which one does not. But what I wanted to do was really to show my students something about the nature of scholarship and research. Yes.
So you want to use this wonderful story get students to look at scholarship.
Yes. And the advantage of that, I think, is that the students know the books or they know about the books. They have either read them even repeatedly or they have at least seen the movies. They know Harry Potter as a cultural artifact, as a cultural phenomenon. That makes it easier for them to see what the scholars are actually doing with that material. It is easier, for instance, to look at Harry Potter as it is treated and investigated by a political scientist or a lawyer or a psychologist or a philosopher, and to understand political science, law, psychology, philosophy. So if we have Harry Potter as the subject matter and then lay over that the disciplinary perspectives, it is easier for the students to understand how subject matter and disciplinary perspectives work together to create scholarship, to create knowledge, meaning, new ideas.
The students you're teaching right now, in general, is Harry Potter part of their childhood experience?
Yes. That's the millennial generation. And John Granger, who is a non-academic scholar of Harry Potter and has written widely on Harry Potter and has really shown how Harry Potter can be taken seriously and is a serious subject of study, says it is the defining text of this generation. They have grown up with Harry. Harry has grown up with them. And students have always been very much interested in things that they consider relevant to them. Now, we can look at that as problematic in all sorts of different ways. You know, how do they know what's relevant to them? How do they know what's going to be relevant for their lives? They think they know this, but we know that they really don't. But looking at Harry Potter in order to explain scholarly thinking, disciplinary thinking, I don't run up against the same, oh, this is not relevant, resistance with the students.
They're already at home.
They're
in the
at home with that. They're at home with the subject. Therefore, I don't know about it. I don't understand it. So it must not be relevant to my life. All of that disappears.
You know, I'm just thinking back to when 80s feminism was first, you know, was that third wave feminism starting?
Yeah.
I grew up with Cinderella, and there was so much academic scholarship and work done on Cinderella. Mm-hmm. And we all knew just what the issues were.
Yes.
Because we knew and loved and had absorbed that story.
Yes.
And this is kind of the
same thing. And then interrogating that story, questioning it, looking at it from new perspectives can actually make a lot of sense. It's not always easy, and there can be some resistance. You know, what are they doing with my beloved story? But at the same time, it can really open up new ways of thinking about things, about the world. Because, okay, here is that familiar story. Now I'm looking at it in a different way. Maybe I can take something away from that.
And from the experience of looking at something differently.
Yeah, absolutely.
That,
yes.
That's a good experience.
It is, always, always.
This was written by this obscure woman, you know, straight out of a napkin in a cafe or something. And it is this astonishing phenomenon now. Why? What is it about these books that grabs children and grabs adults and holds on to us?
I think it's the narrative arch and the underlying basic conflict between right and wrong, good and evil. In, I think, either book one or book two, Albus Dumbledore, the headmaster of Hogwarts School for Witchcraft and Wizardry.
My favorite character, yes. By the way.
says to Harry, it is not who you are, it is the choices you make that determine your path. And that idea that we have choices, that we have agency, that we're not powerless, that we are not victims of circumstances, but can actively change circumstances. I think that is very, very important.
It gives us hope.
It gives us hope in a culture that has gotten stuck in victimization. Mm-hmm. It's always somebody else's fault. And Rowling gives us a way to question that. And I think that's particularly important to understand because these books were written for young readers. So she is trying to tell very young readers, you know, it's your choices, it's your actions, it's not where you come from and what family you belong to and what your social status is or your racial status. It is your choices, it's your actions, it's your decisions that determine where we are going next. And I think that resonates with both younger and older readers who are becoming increasingly, particularly older readers, who are increasingly tired of that culture of victimization and victimhood. And younger readers respond to that because for them it is the way forward. It is the lesson of their lives.
Elizabeth Gumnure has put together a Harry Potter symposium for Muggle scholars that will take place next Friday and Saturday at JMU. And, she says, all of us are welcome to attend. I have read the books. What can I expect to get out of this if I come loiter it with Muggle scholars?
Maybe some new insights about a book you thought you knew, or a new way of looking at those books, maybe some illumination, inspiration, and a chance to also contribute to those ongoing discussions. The title is Replacing Wands with Quills. My students actually worked with me on that title. I'm very happy to say that that title sort of reflects the perspective of our work together and also the perspective of the Harry Potter scholarship, and a chance to also contribute to those ongoing discussions.
It also offers us non-academics a chance to sort of peek behind. You don't get to usually go to academic conferences.
Yes.
Nor perhaps would you want to.
Yes.
And this is a subject that, you know, lights a lot of our fires,
yes,
and you can watch academics at work.
Absolutely.
And get a sense of the process.
Yes.
Elizabeth Gumnure, thank you so much.
Thank you, Martha.